this audience looks different than the audiences that I usually faced. I don't see cowboy boots and big hats. My name is Arbutus O'Neill, and it is by the grace of God that I belong to the Al-Anon family groups. I am powerless over people, places, and things, and because of this program, I can make this admission without feeling guilty. My life continues to be unmanageable when I fail to practice the principles that were given to us by a bunch of ex-drunks who found sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like to believe that the families of the early members of AA were convinced by the miracle of sobriety that this program would work for everyone. And it was out of this conviction that the Al-Anon family groups grew to reach all over the world and have shown astounding results. We subscribe to the concept that alcoholism is a family illness, and then we get so carried away telling people how sick we got that we forget to say we have a program for family recovery. And that's what these weekends are all about. We come here and hear the speakers, participate in workshops, support the members of AA and Al-Anon, and see whole families getting well while they're having a wonderful time. And I'm very grateful to be here this weekend. The last few years have not been the best years of my life. I've had many identities in my lifetime, a child, a student, a married woman, a mother. And I handled these pretty well. But I'm not handling this last identity that well. I do not like the word widow. Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic, but she knows about alcoholism. I went to my first meeting in Amarillo, Texas in 1948. I didn't want to go to that meeting. The only reason I went to that meeting was because I had put myself under an obligation to a lady who was married to a man who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't have to describe the accent in Tennessee. I'm a hillbilly, just like you. And hillbillies don't like to be obliged, and that's the only reason that I went to that meeting in Amarillo. It was an open meeting. There was about the same number of people that are here this morning. And after we were seated in the meeting, a lady leaned across Marguerite and whispered to me. And what she said was, "How long has it been since you had a drink, honey?" And I wasn't embarrassed by the lady's question. I'm not a teetotaler. I used to say I didn't trust teetotalers, but I have a friend down in Wichita Falls, Texas, that's never tasted liquor. She's never even tasted it. She's a real teetotaler. And I'd trust Mildred with my life, so I don't say that anymore. But Marguerite was embarrassed, and she was the one who said, "Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic." Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic, but she knows about alcoholism. I grew up in a house with two men, both of whom was my father. My dad was a two-fisted construction man who worked hard. He played hard, and he drank hard. Dad was a gray-eyed Irishman who taught me to love poetry. He taught me to sing Irish folk songs. He had the patience to teach me to work my geometry problems with his framing square. But on Saturday night, my dad turned into a devil. My father's alcoholism destroyed both of my parents. My father's alcoholism turned my lovely mother into an old, ugly, bitter woman who hated him. She hated him as long as she lived. She hated him long after he was dead and in his grave. And the last years of her life, which she spent in total darkness, she hated anybody that had ever loved John Martin, and that included me. Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic, but she knows about alcoholism. And when I met this tall Texan that was to become the father of my children, I was not concerned with Bill's drinking. Bill didn't drink like Dad. Dad was a hallucinating drunk who saw creeping, crawling things, and Mother never could understand when her jaw was broken that Dad had simply meant to kill a centipede that was crawling in her hair. She couldn't understand that. I'm quite sure I couldn't have either. But Bill was not a compulsive drinker, or not a compulsive drinker. He was a laugh of the party drinker. He crashed debutante's parties and taught them to put your little foot. He didn't drink like Bill. And Father Martin says the only way you can tell an alcoholic is but the one that you know. And because Bill didn't drink like Dad, I was not concerned. We worked for a company that sent us all over the United States, and we got drunk everywhere we went. We got drunk in Chicago, St. Louis, San Antonio, anywhere. But in 1950, two things happened that should have made Bill and me grow up. We became parents, and the world became involved in a war. My daughter's with me this morning, and I'm real unhappy with you because she's sitting over there by herself. Peggy, let the people see how pretty you are. Stand up. She was born in 1940, which allowed me to stay home and take care of my pretty baby and not travel with my husband anymore. But Bill continued to drink, and he started having personality clashes with the people he worked for, and he changed jobs pretty often. One of the jobs brought us down here to Knoxville, Tennessee. About the time they brought that atomic energy plant in, I don't think you all are old enough to remember that, but we came down here, and because there were so many people coming to Knoxville, it was difficult to find a place to live. But eventually, I found a garage apartment about 35 miles away down in Kentucky for Bill and me to live. And I checked in with the hospital to see about having my baby, and I learned that I could not go to that local hospital because it was for the exclusive use for the coal miners that lived in that area. And about the time I got this beautiful news, they carried Bill home. Now, they'd carried him home before, but this time his leg was broken. But they did put a cast on his leg in the emergency room, and I was faced with the fact that I'd have to go home to Mother. My mother was only 12 years older than my husband, and law mercy, they hated each other with a purple passion. Now get the picture. I get on a Greyhound bus. Peggy's 3 years old. Nancy's two. Luther's almost one and cannot walk. Our only son was born with a birth defect, and he didn't walk until he was 3 years old. So we get on the Greyhound bus to go to Cincinnati, Ohio. And Mother lived in one of those very exclusive neighborhoods that don't allow children. So I get a taxi cab and go out to Mother's neighborhood. And Peggy holds hands with Nancy. And I balance Luther on my big belly. And we go up and knock on our mother's door. And she liked to drop dead. That woman liked to drop dead. And she set us down. When I knocked on her door, I said, Mother, will you go down in the lobby and help Bill? And she said, what is the matter with Bill? Is he drunk? And I said, no, ma'am, his leg's broken. So she went down and got Bill and set us down on the couch for one of those talks that you all know about. And she says, "Arbus, there's no doubt in my mind that of all six of my children, you're the most brilliant child I have, but it takes a damn genius to get in a shape like this." So our fourth child, another little girl, was born in a charity ward of the Salvation Army Hospital. Because of the volunteer work my mother had done, I was privileged to have a bed in that hospital. Not a room, a bed. And I'd heard stories all of my life about people, about people who had had an emotional shock and their hair turned white. And I thought it was a granny tale. But while I was lying in that bed in the charity ward of the Salvation Army Hospital, I started having convulsions, and I needed to get my mother, and the nurses were very scarce during the war. You all are not old enough to remember those days, thank the good Lord. But I needed to call my mother, and the telephone was out in the hall. And so I finally got my legs off the edge of the bed and walked out to that telephone, and I passed a mirror, and I saw this real skinny lady with white hair, and it took me a moment or two to realize it was me. But Mother helped to take care of my children and my husband until I was able to do that by myself. But I'm one of those people who can truthfully say that my hair turned white overnight. I don't think that will gain me any brownie points, but it's the truth. Someone asked another member that was waiting at the elevator if I was the woman who was going to talk. And apparently they said yes. And then the remark was made, "What's she going to talk about?" And the answer came, "She's going to tell you how to live with a drunk." But I'm not going to do that. Now, my Bill was 47 years sober in AA when he died. Peggy never saw her dad take a drink, never saw him drunk. But when I came to this program, I didn't believe in people. People do not deal very kindly with families of alcoholics. And I couldn't trust people. I couldn't even trust myself. But it took me a long time in this fellowship to realize that I didn't have to be afraid of people anymore. And I've lived in Texas now. I took our four children to Texas in 1944. Bill had gone ahead of me and gotten a job and leased a house for us and got me a Mexican lady for a housekeeper, and I took the children out to Texas. Bill was from a large family. He had five sisters and five brothers. He was one of 11 children, and his poor little mother died when she was 42, and I imagine it was because she had so many babies. But Bill's brothers were very nice to me, but his sisters didn't really think much of me. They could readily understand why Bill O'Neill drank too much, because he married that Yankee from North Carolina, where they make all that good bourbon liquor and them cigarettes. But I've been in Texas, as I said, since 1944, and I'm a Texan by marriage. You understand that? there's an old saying in Texas that say, I wasn't born in Texas, but I got here as soon as I could. But I'm a Texan by marriage, and our four children have grown up in Texas. But I'm happy to be here, and I don't know what to talk about, what you want me to, and I wonder if you'd like to ask me some questions. I've already told you that I came here in 1951 when we had 50 groups in the whole world. And I've watched this fellowship evolve from 50 groups, and I think we have something like 40,000 now. I'm not sure. I haven't heard a delegates report lately. But if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them. I'm about to lose my voice, you probably notice. Well, my old superintendent used to say that if there is no questions, you have covered your subject sufficiently. Oh, you.
I'm Hank, and I'm a lawyer.
Hey, Hank.
I don't have any questions or anything like that, but I am very happy to be here. And what I'd like to mention is that I am sorry to all.
I can't understand you.
I am sorry to all Al-Anon for what I did to my Al-Anon. Very grateful for this program. I'm kind of sad that the program came to me at the end and a little bit too late, where I could have helped my Al-Anon, because she was sick as well as I was. Like Al-Anon, I am very sorry for what we have done to me.
Thank you. You know, alcoholics are the nicest people in the world when they're sober. And people don't understand why we continue to love and care for the alcoholic. But my father was an alcoholic. My husband was an alcoholic. Two of my children were alcoholics. And I left all of them. So I don't understand this animosity that people have towards sick people. We put sick people in jail to punish them. And we'll never know how many sick alcoholics died in the jails around our country. Does that help?
Hi, Maurice. I'm a member of the Unity Group. Precious darling, would you share with us the first time you met Lois? Bill Wilson's wife?
Who met Lois, the first time you met Lois?
I'm a first panel delegate. That doesn't mean anything unless you're involved with service work. But I was privileged to go to the first World Service Conference in New York City, and of course Lois was there. The AA. I'm sorry, darling.
I'm sorry.
The AAs had their conference the same weekend that we did, but they said they had their conference in that fine Roosevelt Hotel in New York City, and we slummed it down in Brooklyn in a little old hotel called the George Washington. And Bill stayed at the George Washington with Lois, and then he'd go over to the Roosevelt to the AA conference. But he'd always bring Lois down to our meeting, assembly meeting rooms, and make sure that she had a comfortable chair and pitcher of water. Sometimes he'd leave some roses on her plate. They were such a devoted couple. I think probably you'll understand when I say this. When you see Nancy and Ronald Reagan on television, you don't have to ask if those people love each other. It's obvious. And that's the way it was with Bill and Lois Wilson. Lois had to tiptoe to be 5 foot tall, and Bill was 6 foot two. So they create a lot of attention. But I served 3 years as a delegate, and 3 years I served on the Board of Trustees, so I was privileged to work with Lois Wilson for 6 years. I hope I'm never guilty of saying I was a close personal friend of Lois Wilson, because that isn't true. But I did work with her for 6 years, and I had a tremendous admiration for her. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doc.
Good question. Here's a cough drop if you want one.
I was wondering when Al-Anon, up around where I come from, A and wives came together. The wife and the husband went to the AA meeting, and the wives said just as much as the alcoholics did. And I was wondering, what's your experience down in Texas?
Al-Anon started about 1951. We made coffee and served the AA people for a number of years before that. But if someone asks me when did Al-Anon start, I tell them 1951. Coincidentally, that was the year my husband got sober, but it had nothing to do with Al-Anon.
I'm Joe with the Breakwork member of Al-Anon. Can you share a little bit with us about some of the struggles the first Al-Anon groups had before we were fortunate enough to get the traditions?
Well, we didn't have any literature to start with, not one single piece. But when the dear people who started the program of Alcoholics Anonymous wrote the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, they included two chapters in that book for the families. One of those chapters was entitled Two Wives. Now, that's not intended to be a put-down for you fine men who are members of the Al-Anon family group, not at all. The fact of the matter is that when that book was written, there was no women in AA, so they addressed that chapter to wives. The groups in Canada called their groups the wives groups. And then in the other chapter, of course, was entitled To the Family Afterwards. And down in my part of the country where I grew up in Al-Anon, we took a paragraph out of this chapter and used it for a preamble. The paragraph said, "The past is the principal asset of the alcoholic's family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past can be of infinite value to families still struggling with their problem. We feel that each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not, and when the occasion requires, each member of it should bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death or misery for them." End of paragraph. We met in dirty little kitchens and wide hallways, anywhere we could put a few chairs, and we sat together and we talked. You all know very well what we talked about. It was kind of a morbid competition to determine which one of us lived with the sorriest man. And I wasn't comfortable in those meetings. I was not comfortable in those meetings because I did not live with a sorry man. I lived with a fine young man who drank too much. And when these people put those two chapters in the book for us, it was a kind of a dubious experiment. They didn't know whether we would understand the program or not. But I came here, as I said earlier, in 1951. And we had 50 groups. But I think now we have about 40,000. and we reach all over the world. I spent 2 weeks in Australia a couple of years ago, and they have great Al-Anon meetings in that continent. Any more questions?
Judas, would you tell us about the meeting on Butternut? The meeting in Butternut?
Oh, in Abilene, Texas, the AA group meets on a street called Butternut Street. Across the street from the AA clubhouse is a Metro Theater. So those of us, we take our children to the, take Peggy and her brother and two sisters, we'd take them to the theater and we'd go to the AA meeting. But I don't know if the better, it was called the Beacon Club. I don't know if the Beacon Club is there or not anymore. I haven't been in that part of Abilene lately. But that's where the group started in Abilene, Texas. And I went to New York as a delegate. I had an uncle who worked for Chase National Bank, and he lived in New York City for many years, and so I didn't have to go to a hotel, which made me very happy because New York's kind of a scary place. There's so many people, and they're all running somewhere. I never saw anybody walking, and while I was there, they were just going somewhere.
Children alcoholics, and how did you deal with that? Did they go into the program?
We have a group called the Adult Children of Alcoholics. This is for teenagers and young 20s that have lived in a home where there was alcoholism. But the little people, they don't seem to be affected by it. They just love their daddy or their mother, and they don't care if they get drunk. I'm sure that would not be true if they were abused. But alcoholics don't abuse their children that much. But I don't know quite how to answer your question because I was never involved in that kind of a situation.
Yes, dear. He wants you to tell him about Nancy and Luther. He asked if any of your children were alcoholics. So tell him about Nancy and Luther and being an AA.
Not all alcoholics belong to AA. And when my Bill got sober and started going to AA meetings, it developed that two of our children need the meetings too. Our son Luther had 16 years sobriety when he died. And Nancy, who's married to a master sergeant from the Air Force, whatever that is, and lives in Wichita Falls, but she's got 23 years sobriety in AA. So AA is a good influence for families where they have alcoholic parents, and because they have a support group. And my children predate Alateen. They never did belong to Alateen, but my grandchildren. I guess they know everything I know.
Hey,
Peggy's moving around. I guess she's leaving us.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Shirt tails out.
Hey, over this way. Look at me. My name is Rudy Little. I just wanted to pass on to you that I stopped by to see Hazel Davis.
Hazel Davis.
Hazel,
he went to see Hazel Davis.
Hazel came in.
What is Hazel Davis?
She's 90 years old, but said to tell you hello.
Hazel Davis said to tell you hello. He stopped to visit with
Thank
you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
When you see her again, tell her that I sent her my love.
Thank you.
Where'd she go?
I can't see them.
I know.
Oh.
Go ahead.
I'm Jenny, and I'm an Illinois.
Hey, Jenny.
And my question to you, Ms. Arbutus, is keep coming back, of course, is one of our slogans. What does that mean to you?
Keep coming back is one of our slogans. What does that mean to you?
It means that's exactly what it says. If I want to stay well, I keep coming back.
Estelle Jo, can you share a little bit with us about the first state conferences, or a little bit about how speakers, you would have speakers from other places? Can you share a little bit about the growth of Al-Anon in your state? And
well, as I think I said earlier, that when I came here, we had 50 groups.
Right.
And I believe seven of them was in the state of Texas. And, well, you know, Guerreras is a bunch of drunks. If we know there's an Al-Anon meeting over in San Angelo, we're going to go over there and find out if they're doing it right. So that's it was not a progression. It was an evolving thing. Somebody went to Lubbock, for example, to a convention, and they heard a speaker they liked, and so Abilene invited that speaker, and I always got in the act if I could, and that's, like I say, it was an evolution. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay.
How many people did you sponsor?
Please?
Early on.
Say again.
How many people did you sponsor? I'm Jane, I'm not Holly.
That's none of your business.
When did it evolve into sponsorship?
Okay. If I tell you who I sponsored, honey,
not who.
Now, but pay attention. Okay. That's an ego trip. See, so we don't do that. We don't feed our ego by counting heads and feeding us.
She wants to know how Al-Anon started sponsoring other Al-Anon's mother.
Okay. It was a kind of a thing of attraction. I went to New York City to the first conference as a delegate from Texas. And there was a lady up there who was editor of the Forum, which is a counterpart to the AA Grapevine. For 22 years, and she was funnier than all get out. We had our meetings on the mezzanine floor, and I was late getting to one of the meetings, and I went upstairs to get my badge, because if I didn't have my badge, I wasn't eligible to vote. And when I came back down, they had a little bar about like this table over here, and Margaret Doherty, the editor of the Forum, was in front of me, and she was a sizable woman. And she didn't even break stride. She walked by that table, picked up that jigger of booze and downed it, and didn't break a stride. And it tickled. I thought it was so funny, and I leaned against the wall and laughed at her. But she later became my sponsor. And she had one child only, and she and Jack, her husband, moved home to the United States. Margie was born in Paris, France, at the American hospital. And Margaret and Jack brought her back to the States because she could speak French better than she could speak English. And so she keeps in touch now that her mother's gone, and she usually calls me on Margaret's birthday, or I call her. She's a lovely lady.
Stephanie Alcoholic.
Stephanie.
I was just wondering, you sound like you've been active in service work all these years, and was your husband active in service work, both of you together, and how did you manage the children and being active.
All right, she says, it sounds as if you've been active in service work all of these years. Was Daddy in service work as well? And how did you manage the four of us while the two of you were doing the service work?
Well, you've got to remember that by the time I got involved with service work, my children were college students. And my husband, if I'd wanted a moon, Bill O'Neill had got it for me. He literally wore out two cars when I was delegate, so I could go to all of the districts in Texas. And like I say, if I'd wanted a moon, Bill O'Neill had got it for me, wouldn't he, honey?
Yes, dear.
Miss him very, very much.
I have a question. My name is Joyce.
How has your relationship with God evolved over the years? And tell them about the bit about, oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord. And tell them the bit about, oh Lord, when all you could say was the prayer, oh Lord.
Well, that's a very personal thing. And it's, I don't quite know how to answer your question, honey. My concept of God would not be the same as your concept. And I think everybody has to find their own concept. You know, my God's mine, and your God's yours. Does that help you? If y'all don't ask me some questions, I'm going home. My legs are getting tired.
She wants to know about your relationship with your sponsor and the other women at Al-Anons and how you worked the steps the first several years.
Thank you. I don't do women. My relationship with members of the fellowship, my sponsor, of course, And Bill Wilson, I had a lot of admiration for Bill Wilson. But men have a different viewpoint, I think, in a fellowship such as ours than women do. Women are sneaky. I don't know quite how to answer your question, honey. When I first came here, of course, I was 35 years old. I'm 88 now, so I've been in this fellowship a little while. But my first sponsor was a little gray-eyed gal who put my nose down in those 12 steps, and I had the distinct feeling if I didn't take those blasted things, she wouldn't let me come up for air. I was going to take those steps, you know, and get an A+ up in the corner of my paper, like I always did. And I was going to slap that paper down in front of that gray-eyed sponsor and say, I took these damn steps and they didn't work. And they did. They did.
Arbutus, did you know Dr. Bob?
Say again.
Did you know Dr. Bob?
No. Dr. Bob died in 1949, and I didn't come into the fellowship until 51. But I knew young Bob. He died a couple of months ago, you know. And I was brokenhearted to learn that because he was a good man, and he was doing good things for the fellowship. And I looked in the phone book when I came in last night and to see if I could find Mona's a telephone, and the telephone that's listed has been disconnected. I imagine she was getting too many calls. But I hope before I go home I can see Mona. Bob would have expected me to. I wasn't Bob's sponsor in the real sense, but he treated me like a sounding board because I'd been in this program since God.
Again?
What did they use for meditation before Odette came out?
What did you use for meditation before Odette came out? I don't know what she's talking about.
The big book. The big book. I required the people that I sponsored to study the first 164 pages. That's all of the book, of course, except for... But the personal stories began on 165. But if you study those first 164 pages, you'll have a working knowledge of the fellowship, mm-hmm. of the program. And I require the people that I sponsor to study those steps. And that was published long before One Day at a Time. One Day at a Time, a lot of people think that Alice Butler wrote that, but she did not. She compiled it. She took letters from people all over the world and condensed them and put them in a book. But she did not write the book. It made her very unhappy for you to make that assumption.
I'm full of questions. I'm still Joan. I hear a lot about service sponsors, Albert. And I'd like for you to share a little bit about the responsibility of a sponsor to exercise the three legacies of the program, not just recovery. You mentioned that you've helped one another, you shared the program. Would you speak a little bit about the sponsorship and three legacies?
Well, you know, sponsorship was originated long before we had, quote, three legacies. That's recovery. I can't say it. But anyway, all the things that we did were trial and error. See, nobody had any experience, and the AA people didn't have any sobriety, and we didn't have any sense. So it was kind of an equal thing for us to develop the program that we live by. No, I was 35 years old when I came into this fellowship. I'm 88 now. Y'all ready to go home?